life is messy and complicated and unpredictable. As a Buddhist, I cultivate discipline and establish a regular, ongoing practice that never ends because the messiness of life never ends. But Buddhism isn't the only framework for a strong practice that helps us to cope with the rambunctious nature of life. Today, to talk about the practice and work of discipline, humility, and love, I collaborate with Tejai Moore, singer, songwriter, and father of two. He shares with me how growing up in Germany and being exposed to difference, not as a problem, but just as part of life, has shaped his worldview. He also shares his practice of humility and discipline and how habituating himself in this way helps him as a father and a musician. So much so that they are, in his own words, now just who I am. It's nothing that I have to try to do. If you've been listening to the more recent episodes of Everything is Workable, you'll know that TJ is responsible for the new theme music that we have. Extra special thank you goes to my patrons this week, as it was only through your patronage that I have been able to pay him for writing this theme song. Thank you so much. If you're interested in becoming a patron, there's information in the write-up about the show, and you can also visit my website, caitlinschatch.com, to learn more. Hi, Tejai. Thank you so much for collaborating with me on an episode.
Oh, thank you. Hey, Caitlin, how are you? Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
It's awesome. And thank you for the theme music.
Oh, no problem at all. I'm really glad you love it. You like it. And I'm happy to have done that also. You know, I think it was about time that, you know, I was a guest on a podcast, and it's amazing to be here. I'm happy.
That's cool. That's awesome. So I always start out by asking my guests to share a little bit about their experience when they were growing up and at the point that it was that they started to sort of become aware of the need for social action. So like, when was it for you that you first became aware of discrimination and a need to do something to address and change it?
Right. I would say maybe right out of high school. I say around that age, so maybe like 17, 18. And I say this because, you know, in my growing up, I believe I grew up much different than many are aware of. I'm from Miami. I was born in Miami, but I was raised overseas in Germany. I left Miami when I was about, I say 7, 8 years old. So I went to elementary school in Germany, and I also finished high school in Germany. So literally was raised there. And, you know, of course, it's a whole different culture. This is totally different than Miami or the United States of America in itself, I could say. So, you know, I seen many things that opened up my mind, that showed me different things and opened my eyes. So I would say around that age, 17, 18 is when I seen that need for the change.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't know that. That's really interesting. What was the reason that you went to Germany, that your family went there?
Well, my mom and dad both were in the military. Mm-hmm. So they both were in the military. And that's why, when I was in elementary school, my mom was in the army. And then by high school, my dad was in the army. So,
right. So did you, at like, what age was it that you came back to the States?
I came back to the States at about 20 or 21. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. So really it's like you grew up in Europe.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I grew up in Europe, and it was an amazing thing because I literally know the difference that it would, you know, that it makes for me to have grown up that way and to see more of the world, to be exposed to, like I said, the other cultures and things like that, because I have family, I have friends that have never left the States or never left Miami. People sometimes call me for advice, like, hey man, you know, TJ, what do you think about this? You know, what do you think about that? You know, and I'm able to wholeheartedly give them a little advice or give them an answer because my thought process isn't Miami, Florida. You know what I mean? So it's a blessing. It's a blessing, and I'm very grateful for it.
Yeah, no, I think that's really fascinating. I'd love to hear some more about that because, like, for me, I was born and raised in one city, basically, and lived there until I was 24. And I traveled a bit, but never really experienced different cultures per se. And so yeah, when I was 24, I went to London, to the UK, and I ended up living in the UK for 6 years. And, like, I mean, you know what Europe's like. It's all very small and interconnected and stuff. So it's pretty easy to get to other countries and stuff. And
definitely
that exposure was just so different. Like, I became more political because of that. actually involved in and understanding that the role that I could play in politics. So yeah, no, I'd love to hear a bit. Like, what is it that you think? Like you said, you're aware of the things that you gained and the value of that. So what are some of the things that you see very specifically that basically helped you to expand your worldview from that experience?
I would say to appreciate, you know what I mean? To appreciate, and just because something is different or someone is different doesn't mean worse. That's something that I caught on to, because a lot of times, like, oh, this person is different than me, or oh, they eat this kind of food, or they do this, oh, that's nasty, or that's I don't like this kind of person. And that really, you know, when you're in Europe, you know, as you experienced, and you're in Germany, and all you have are those people around you that are different. You know what I mean? Your heart is opened up, your eyes are opened up, your mind, and that's really what it did for me. So I feel like from that experience, I'm more disciplined, I'm more polite, I'm more thoughtful. I have more humility towards others and more compassion towards others, instead of only the people that are exactly the same as I am, you
Yeah.
know?
Also probably really helpful for you as, so you're a father of two kids who are totally adorable, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I like watching your Instagram and you post them. They're so cute. So what for, like, as a parent, I mean, you co-parent?
Yes. With my daughter, I co-parent.
Okay.
Her mother and I, we are no longer in a relationship, but we both are still present, you know, for our daughter. So we very much so co-parent. With my son, it's literally just me. So that's something totally different.
And when you're talking about co-parenting specifically, that's something that for a lot of people can feel really unworkable, depending on what your relationship is, any tension going on, and then like different opinions about how children should be raised, which can be an issue even if you are still in the relationship with that person or not. So what have you learned about co-parenting with someone that you're no longer in an intimate relationship with?
I've learned that it's definitely a task. It's definitely a task. It's not simple, it's not easy, but as long as both parents have the, you know, the child's best interest at heart, it's not impossible. It's far from impossible. Even if you can't stand each other, is, you know, you when you realize that it's not about you, it's not about me, everything goes smoothly. And that's where my daughter Harmony, her mom and I, that's where we are right now at this point. I know some parents, some people who co-parent, they actually still have somewhat of a relationship with the other parent. For me, for us to keep all of the confusion down, for us to keep anything extra down, anytime we talk, literally it's only about my daughter. You know, it's not even like, hey, what did you do today? Hey, what's going on? Hey, did you go out last week? Or it's literally none of that. I would love that. That would be cool. But we're on the phone. It's literally about harmony. And that way, you know, it keeps any negativity down, and it, you know, it works for us.
Yeah, that's really cool. And so what's the difference then with, like you said, there's a big difference between being a father where you're in the co-parenting relationship with your daughter and then being a father where it's you and your son. And then also, of course, like these are they're siblings. So what's that experience like for you?
Again, something that's not simple. Something that's not simple at all. But I can say from my specific experience, because I know everybody's experiences with this type of subject is different. My son and my daughter were once in the same household. They're not strangers. My daughter's mom and my son are not like strangers or unaware of each other, like this, because we were all in the same household at a certain time. So that really makes things easier. Now, the hard part comes with now they are apart. And this is something that I never foreseen, nothing that I ever planned, nothing that I ever wanted for my son and daughter was to be apart. That's where the hard part comes, you know, right there.
Right. So those like unexpected circumstances, right? What have you learned about working with that around parenting, right? Like things change, you know, and it, like kids are unpredictable, relationships you're in.
That's definitely something. I just learned that once again with this, I learned that it's not impossible. Just like with the co-parenting in itself, if you have the children's best interest at heart, it's not impossible to, you know, to make it through these times. So, you know, there are times when, though my daughter's mom and I, we of course my daughter's with her, She's with me at times. We make sure it's an equal time frame so that my daughter can not forget her brother. My daughter cannot forget me. In a year's time frame, she's just as much here with my son and I as she is with her mother. So I know it just teaches me, and it taught me that you know you have to be fair in these type of times. If it was up to me, my daughter would be here with my son and I. That's it, you know. But I have to be fair. Again, humility. For me, humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. I would love to have my daughter here 24/7, but you know, although her mother and I are not together, we barely even speak personally. I still even have her best interest at heart, and I know she loves my daughter just as much as I do. So just try to be fair. I try to be really, really fair. Yep.
I really like what you just said about humility. Where do you think you got that from? Like that, how have you picked that up over time?
That there is just from my faith, you know, my faith in God and really my learnings in that. I really feel like we're here to not live for ourselves, but to live for others. We're here to not love ourselves so much that we forget to love others. And I think that's a big, big, big problem in this world, period. No matter if it's Europe, United States of America, wherever it is, that some people are so in love with themselves that there's no room for anyone else. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
It's a big problem. And that right there is the total opposite of humility. It's impossible, you know, and that's it creates big problems, whether it's at a fast pace or rather over time. It definitely creates big problems. Yep.
So as well as being a father, you are also a musician.
I am.
And what's been your experience of balancing a creative career with parenting?
It is, you know, doing that and being a parent, and especially with my specific circumstances, I use it as motivation. Everything I'm doing is for my son and daughter, no matter what our living arrangements are, no matter what the co-parenting situation is, because everything I'm doing now, I'm doing it for them. Rather, I get to see the fruits of all of this labor that I've put in over the years. I really wholeheartedly feel that they will. So it's definitely a big, big, big source of motivation. It is. Mm-hmm. Big source of motivation for me. I don't even know how I would be if I didn't have my son and daughter. Like, would I be more lazy? Would I be just so laid back and so content with everything? Like, okay, hey, I just did this. Okay, cool. I'm good for the next 5 years. I'm just going to chill. It's like when you're a parent, it ain't no chill. There's no time off. There's no days off. So that keeps me on my toes as well. I take that fuel and I convert that into my business, into my music. It's something that I learned how to do. You take your discipline in one thing and you apply it to another.
Yeah. How much do you think that the discipline, like, would you say that that was something that you really picked up specifically from German culture?
That right there, I would say that culture would be the military culture.
It's military. My parents,
that was something my parents did not like. They did not play when it came to discipline, as far as even as simple as if you say something, do it. You know what I mean? Like, hey, if you said you were going to clean the kitchen at 5 p.m., if it hits 5:01 p.m. and you're not cleaning the kitchen yet, that's a problem. You know, like, this is how on me my parents were. And this wasn't even just them. Like, okay, we're going to get on here. Let's get on TJ. It was just the fact of their career field. This is, you know, how you're pretty much, this is how you live. This is how you move when you're military. So to have that twice, well, both of them in the military. Yeah. So I think that's something. And man, I'm really about that discipline. Discipline is everything. Say my son, you know, with him and I here, and, you know, say bath time. We have bath time, of course, every day, of course. When he gets out of the bath, he has this thing where he is supposed to close the shower curtain. And just maybe about a week or two ago, I got onto him and I spoke with him. I said, Arion, I said, come in here. That's my son's name, Arion. I said, is there something you're supposed to do in here? And he said, oh, I'm so sorry. And he closed the shower curtain because he already knew before I even said it. Now, what I explained to him is that, son, like, I know it seems like daddy is getting on to you about something so small, but I said, what I want you to realize that is that if you cannot do the small things, how are you ever going to do the big things? You understand? So we're going to continue to do these small things. You're going to continue to get out of the bath, close that shower curtain without anybody having to ask you. as you live your life and move on, you're going to remember that. And you, the big things are going to be nothing. When you commit to something and say, hey, yeah, I'm going to do that, you're literally going to do it. You know what I mean? Because you're going to remember times like this. So, you know, this is what I mean when I say I convert or apply one thing to another. It's, you know, even as small as closing the shower curtain.
Yeah.
It's also, because I think a part of what goes along with discipline is accountability. And I was thinking what you're saying about the little things. So as a Buddhist, one of the, there's a teaching from, an 8th century Buddhist teacher. He says, by training with little cares, you learn to put up with bigger stuff, basically.
Wow.
I can't remember exactly what the translation is, but yeah, it's basically that, like, you start small, and it's exactly what you said, right? And it's true. You train yourself in those little ways, and then over time, when the bigger stuff comes up, yeah, you're able to face it. And
you're able to face it, which is with your head up, with your chest out. It's really nothing, you know. It's like, oh, this is normal. All I have to do is do what I said I'm going to do. Yeah. That's huge. I had no idea about that. That's literally the same thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun when you come across teachings that are like thousands of years old.
Yeah, on common sense. Definitely. Oh, that's where that comes from. You know? Yeah. It's something I'm really about. And like I said, even applying that to my son and letting him know about that. And also my daughter is something that I live by as well. You know, I really do.
Yeah.
These are things that nobody sees, you know? I really feel like discipline and living that kind of life and living with humility, these are things that nobody sees. You know, the camera doesn't have to be on. You don't have to take a picture of discipline. You don't have to take a picture of humility and post it. It's like, these are things that you just live by on a daily basis. That's where I am in my life. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, what has been the value of that for you? Like, what are the things that you've seen come to fruition by having that sort of an approach?
Oh man. Some amazing things, you know. Even I can say, being a single father with my son since he was 2 years old, he just turned 8 years old on January 1st. So it's been 6 years now. Mm-hmm. And just being able to do that wholeheartedly and 100% with no slack, but also pursue my career and move forward in my music career 100% and wholeheartedly as well. It's such a task. It's like, man, sometimes I look back on days and I look back on years and I say, man, like, how did you do that? And it's really from discipline. You know, it all started with the small things. And now that I'm faced with such big things on a daily basis, it's just my life. It's a lifestyle. So I can say that's something that it really taught me and has really helped me with. Although I'm still learning it, although I'm still applying it every day, I think I applied it so much and practiced it so much that now it's just who I am. It's nothing that I have to try to do. I don't have to try to love my son twice because his mother is not around. This is just something that I do. I love him twice as much. I don't have to, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, these are the things. These are the things that I learned from that. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And what other kind of supports have you had in your life? Like, what sort of supports have you had from community or family, or like the creative community that you're in, any of that?
Yeah. Oh, well, my family is very supportive. My family is very supportive. So that helps out a lot as well. My mom, my dad, my sister, my grandparents, my uncles, my cousins. Now, everybody is just kind of like, they look at me and it amazes me for people to say that they are motivated or inspired by me. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, wow, like little old me. I guess it just inspires people to continue to move forward and move through whatever they're going through. They'll say, hey, if TJ can do this, and we know that's going on, but he's still moving forward in life and his career at the same time, okay, hey, I'm inspired. And for me to be able to make people feel like that, even if it's one person, 10 people, or 100 people, that's success to me. So let alone anything else that comes in my career, opportunities and this type of money or this type of that, the success is to inspire people and to motivate people, and that's making a change, and that's what I'm here to do.
So, yeah, what could you talk a bit about, like, music and social change and what that means to you and what that looks like for you?
Yeah, I feel like music is very important in social change, very, very important. These days, it may be one of the most important. You know, I'm not sure if you agree with that or not, but it's definitely up there on the list because music in itself is, like, already so influential. you make music, you can make music that motivates people positively, you know, and it's not hard. It's not hard. I don't feel like it's a hard thing to do, but also you can make music that motivates people negatively. And that's also not hard to do. You have certain artists that has made the choice to make that type of music, you know? So music and social change is like hand in hand these days, if you ask me.
What have been some of the influences in your life with your music?
You mean as far as the experiences with my music, or you mean like as far as the influences?
Like sort of inspiration that you found, like where does that come from the music that you create and any kind of music, like when you were growing up as well, or other right. art or anything like that, that really inspired you and informs the music that you create?
Right. I can say the way I grew up, it's because for me, that's a two-part question. as far as the influence of my music, I would say a big part of it is the way I grew up. Again, being born in Miami, being from Miami, but being raised in Germany, it's like I from seeing those different cultures and literally being exposed to that, pursuing and beginning my music career in Germany. But of course, I still have my Floridian, you know, Miami roots. It's a certain dish. You know, you have this sauce, you know, this European sauce, and then you have this Miami sauce. So that definitely a big influence in my music and even in who I am as a person today. As far as me beginning music and what pushed me to do what I'm doing now and move forward, mm-hmm. it was, and I can give it, I want to give a little long story short. It was basically, put it like this, my last day of 11th grade in high school in Germany. And this is something many people don't know. Can I give specific details
you
on it?
Yeah, you can tell a long story. That is fine.
Okay. Well, this happened the last day of 11th grade, Germany. I'm in class. We're in our last period of the day. We're taking our last test. I was one of the students to finish my test, I guess, rather quickly. I finished it rather quickly. I was one of the first done. I was asked by the teacher, like, hey, TJ, can you run this out? A lot of times, anything we could do to get out of the building, go outside, we would do it. So teacher would say, hey, Caitlin, can you run this to the trash can? And you probably jump up out of your seat before she finished her sentence.
Right.
You know, to run out to the outside dumpster near where the school buses, you know, line up at. You're like, oh, yeah, I got that. Yep. So I was asked to do that. And I'm like, okay, last period, maybe some people are already outside, last day of school. Okay, I grabbed my CD player. And at the time, I was just, I was into the music. I was recording. This was in the beginning, though. You know, I'm 16 years old at the time, because my birthday is in July. So I hadn't turned 17 yet. 16 years old in the end of 11th grade. And I grabbed my CD player and a burnt CD of some new music that I had recorded on the computer, on sound recorder. But I still, you know, it was still the music. It was good to me. It was the quality was horrible. but, you know, so I grabbed my CD player and I grabbed the trash and I go out. And then as I come back in, I had my headphones on, you know, I'm walking down the hallway. I'm kind of bopping down the hallway, coming back to class. And the teacher was like, hey, that music was so loud. Give me that. You know what I mean? Give me that. And I'm like, hey, I believe her name was Mrs. Hassan. Miss Hassan. I say, hey, Miss Hassan. I said, no. I say, hey, look, I say, I give you the CD player, but I need my CD, Miss Hassan. Like, come on. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, so it became a whole big thing. And because of that, for 12th grade, I wasn't able to play basketball for some time. I was expelled from school because I would not give the CD as well. They expelled me for half of the semester of 12th grade, beginning my 12th grade, which it had me not able to play basketball, which at the time, basketball was my life. Basketball was my dream. Basketball, going to school, playing basketball, pursuing the NBA was my dream. But for that to happen and the way it happened, something so minute, something so small that they expelled me from school, and in return, this, you know, changed my whole like career plans for after high school. That showed me that music was what I was here to be doing, because it didn't have to come to that. So ever since then, which this was this is well over, I won't even say how many years ago I'm going to be telling my age, but this was so long ago, you understand? And I'm still going now, and that right there, that day, is a big part of motivation for me to continue to do what I'm doing, to continue to move how I'm moving, and to realize that even something that doesn't go your way, something that seems like trouble, something that seems like chaos at the time, it could tell you your purpose in your life. It could reveal that to you. At that point, it's your choice if you're going to pursue it or not. But I really felt like that moment and how everything turned out revealed my purpose in my life to me. And now, many years, one more many years later, I'm still going, and I'm doing okay. I'm not at my peak, but I'm doing okay. So, yeah, that's something. That's basically the beginning of my career and when it became a career at that point. Shortly after that, I was in a group. Shortly after that, we performed on tour dates. We went on tour, even performed with a group by the name of B2K. I'm not sure where of B2K or if you all know who that is. Huge group at the time, huge boy band at the time. And from that point, about 2006, I can give that date, came back to the USA from Germany to pursue our career in the United States at that point. So it really just, if that never happened in school, I would never have been on tour at such a young age. I would never have performed with B2K, which was one of the biggest groups of all genres at the time. And now I wouldn't even be a guest on the podcast today with you.
Yeah, it's interesting actually what you're saying about like your life trajectory and when you think that you know how your life is going to go and then something completely sort of sideswipes you.
Yes. And I could talk about it now, like, some years back, it would still bother me how that happened. But it's like now I'm like, man, look, everything is okay. You know what I mean? It's like everything is fine. Everything is even still getting better. I'm still on my way up. I'm not on my way down. So it's a blessing. It's definitely a blessing. And that was a blessing in disguise that day, but a blessing nonetheless. Yep.
That's cool. I think as well, like, so as someone who's in a creative field and the experience of being, I don't know how to describe it. It's basically how like art and music and theater, all these things are sort of seen as something that's unnecessary or frivolous, except that people have been creating art and music and theater since like the beginning of people.
Right. Yeah.
For you, what does success in this look like?
Success in this, you mean as far as in just in the career field, period?
With your creativity and with your music and your work.
I would say success is, as mentioned earlier, the main thing for me is making a difference, inspiring and motivating people. To me, that's success. And now I can say that I have at least semi-success because now, many years after pursuing my career, I'm starting to see that, and people are opening up to me in that way and expressing that this is who I am in their life. People are like, hey, man, because of you, I didn't quit, and now I'm doing this. You know what I mean? So more and more people that are aware of my story and even the things that I just shared with you that you didn't even know, people take that as an inspiration and is for them to use. So I think that's what success is. For me, it literally isn't an amount of money. It isn't an amount of how many people know you. Because I think when it comes to money, you have to put another word in front of success, and that's financial. So for some people, financial success is the goal. For me, success, making a difference, making a change in this world. If you can change one person, you never know, that one person may go on to be the president. That one person may go on to be a positive politician in our government. That's making a change, and that's what I'm about. I feel like if the money is going to come, it's already going to come. Just like that day that happened with the CD, that was already going to come. That happened. And many years later, now look what's going on. So if I motivate one person today, many years later, there's no telling, what that person can grow to. So I feel like that's what success is, motivating and inspiring along the way. Yeah.
What about your faith? Like, what sort of influence has that had throughout your life and your career and your outlook and as a parent, all of that?
Well, that's everything. Faith is everything. That right there is above. That's the first thing. You understand? Like that right there. For me, faith, my faith in God, that is not knowing how things are going to be okay, not knowing when things are going to be okay, but knowing that they will. You understand? So that right there, for me, faith is above everything. It is. Because right now, you know, I'm in a position where, say, in my career, 2 days from now, my album comes out. Mm-hmm. I have an album coming out. I don't know how this release is going to go. I don't know if the sales are going to be 10,000 in the first month or 10 in the first month. I literally don't know, but I know it's going to be okay. And that's faith. So that keeps me going. That keeps me happy. That keeps me appreciative of the 10 or the 10,000. That's faith. Faith is an action. You understand? Faith is an action, isn't it? For me, it's a verb. It's not a noun. So you have to live in that, you know?
Yeah, no, I love that. It's beautiful. I think that more things need to be verbs. One of my favorite teachings from a Zen teacher, Zenju Earthland Manuel, is that she turns God into a verb. She says we need to do more Godding.
Hey, yes, exactly. Yep. that's a big verb.
Yeah, it's a big one. It's beautiful.
Totally agree with that, man. It's like so many things, even with love, period. I feel that many people look at love as a noun, but love is a verb.
Oh, yeah.
Love is what you do. It's not, hey, I love you, you know, or love, you know. If you love something or love somebody, you have certain duties. If you have faith, you have certain duties. You know what I'm saying? If you believe in God, you have certain duties to go out here and be guiding, you know what I mean, on a daily basis. Like, I totally agree with that. It's not just a person, place, or a thing. And that's that. It's something you have to do. It requires much, much action. It really does. But I think a lot of people are not aware of that. So this is why their definition or their expression of love isn't really what someone would feel like. Oh, hey, this person loves me. They say they love. No, that person love, they feel something for you, but they are not expressing the love. You know what I mean? And that right there is an automatic thing to express, to move with action when something is a verb in your life rather than just a person, place, or a thing.
That's totally fantastic.
Thank you, Taylor. Yep, I agree with you 100%. We on the same page.
So my final question is always, it's less of a question. It's really more just to give you space to offer support or guidance or anything to listeners. People who are in a creative field, whether it's their primary source of income or not, or for parents, or specifically for single fathers, anything that you want to offer, basically.
Okay. Lastly, I'll say this. One thing that we have to do and remember to do is to never let someone else's limitations be yours. And I feel that you can apply that to life. You can apply that to your career. You can apply that to parenting. You can apply that to work. Tomorrow, never let someone else's limitations be yours, because this is something that can easily happen. Someone may say, oh, you can't do this, if that is a duty of theirs, maybe on your behalf. But usually the can't is upon them, but it will be spoken and made to feel as if it's upon you. So what we have to do is we have to take our experiences, use them as fuel, as I mentioned, you know, with discipline and my experiences of being from Miami, but being raised in Germany. We take these experiences, use them as fuel. And even when no one else is, sees it, that there is true faith in God, and that's power. To never let someone else's limitations be yours. That right there, there is no limit.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Caitlin. Thank you for having me.
Tejai Moore is a singer and songwriter. His latest album, Right My Wrongs, released earlier this month, February 2018. You can find out more about his work through his website, tejaimoore.com. To find out more about my work in the world, to get in touch with me, or to become a patron, visit caitlinschatch.com. The link is in the show description. This episode of Everything is Workable was made possible through the patronage of Gretchen Wagner, Julian and Shannon Hatch, Winita Budgen, and Margaret Prescott. Thank you to Tejai Moore of Moore Music for the original theme song.